Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
Welcome to Lingua Franca. I'm Kate Bochner. The detention and proposed trial of David Hicks continues to highlight the language of the law, perhaps like no other public issue in recent times. Today we drill down into another legal concept expressed in quaint language, which readily signals precise meaning to lawyers but remains a mystery to the rest of us. The term is ex post facto, which translates from the Latin as after the fact. It refers to laws which are made retrospective. Here's Peter Vickery, QC, barrister and special rapporteur for the International Commission of Jurists, to explain the term ex post facto. Peter Vickery.
The Latin expression ex post facto literally means after the fact. It is often used to describe an ex post facto law, or what is commonly called a retrospective law. An ex post facto or retrospective law has its most serious consequences in the criminal law. The effect of such a law passed after the event is to convert conduct which is innocent at the time it was undertaken to punishable criminal conduct. A simple example will serve to illustrate the point. Kate drives her daughter to school following her usual route. She travels through a 60 km per hour speed zone near the school at a respectable 50 km per hour. Her speed is recorded on a traffic camera. Kate's driving has not broken any law, and she is perfectly innocent. Parliament then passes a law converting this particular speed zone to a 40 km per hour zone. This is a legitimate and sensible exercise of legislative power. However, the new law goes a step further. It says that the new speed zone shall also apply to an earlier date, which includes the time that Kate was driving her daughter to school. Kate's earlier innocent conduct overnight becomes illegal. She is justifiably outraged when she receives a hefty fine and feels a profound sense of injustice and insecurity. "What else have I done that they will punish me for?" she rightly asks. What has all this got to do with David Hicks, imprisoned at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba? In the events that have happened, as we shall see, these unassuming little words have taken on central importance to his case. Following his capture in November 2001, David Hicks was not charged with any offence until the 26th of August 2004. He was then charged before the former military commission with three offences: conspiracy, attempted murder, and aiding the enemy. Since the Hamden decision was handed down by the US Supreme Court in June last year, and after the recent ruling of the Military Commission Convening Authority, all three of these charges have now been abandoned. Hicks therefore remained imprisoned at Guantanamo Bay for more than 5 years without being served with a valid charge. Earlier this month, he was formally charged with the novel offence of providing material support for terrorism. This is a recently invented war crime which was created on 17 October 2006 when President Bush signed the Military Commissions Act of 2006 into law in the United States, and yet it is sought to apply the offence to the activities of Hicks in Afghanistan in 2001. A detailed legal analysis of the new offence of providing material support for terrorism can be found in an advice posted on the website of the Law Council of Australia, dated 8 March 2007. Suffices to say that the offence as charged is retrospective in its application to David Hicks. It has never constituted a war crime. Indeed, it was wholly unknown in the law of war. Secondly, the offence did not replicate any domestic law of the United States as things stood in 2001. As early as 1651, Thomas Hobbes wrote in his famous Leviathan, "No law made after a fact done can make it a crime, for before the law there is no transgression of the law." Writing in the 18th century, the celebrated English jurist Sir William Blackstone referred to the scheme of the infamous Roman Emperor Caligula in prescribing laws by writing them in very small characters and hanging them up on high pillars to entrap unwary citizens. Blackstone then said, there is still a more unreasonable method than this, which is called the making of laws ex post facto, when, after an action, indifferent in itself, is committed, the legislator then, for the first time, declares it to have been a crime and inflicts a punishment upon the person who has committed it. The reason for the protection is that people should not be convicted and sentenced for actions that were not illegal when they were taken without fair warning that the conduct was criminal. A retrospective criminal law is unjust because it deprives people of the knowledge of what behaviour will or will not be punished and makes breaches of the criminal law a lottery at the whim of those in power. Protection against prosecution for retrospective criminal offences is a basic human right. It was formally recognised by the international community in 1948 when the Universal Declaration of Human Rights was adopted and proclaimed by the United Nations. Article 11 of the Declaration provides this: "No one shall be held guilty for any penal offence on account of any act or omission which did not constitute a penal offence under national or international law at the time when it was committed, nor shall a heavier penalty be imposed than the one that was applicable at the time the penal offence was committed." The right is also recognised in numerous other human rights treaties and constitutions throughout the world. In Victoria, for example, protection against the application of retrospective criminal laws is provided for in the recently introduced Charter of Human Rights and Responsibilities. Australia, along with the United States, is a party to two international treaties which prohibit trials for retrospective offences: the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights by Article 15 and the Third Geneva Convention by Article 99. Proceeding with a trial of David Hicks on the basis of the present charge is a violation of these international treaties, which are binding on both countries. The conduct also contravenes the standards for trials of war crimes contained in Division 268 of the Australian Criminal Code, which incorporates the treaty provisions. Importantly for David Hicks, in the United States since 1789, the principle has been enshrined in the American Constitution. Article 1 expressly prohibits ex post facto criminal laws. In the very early case of Calder against Bull in 1798, the US Supreme Court established the tests for determining ex post facto criminal law prohibited by the Constitution. These tests are applied in American courts to this day. Justice Chase said in his judgment in that early case, "The legislature may enjoin, permit, forbid and punish. They may declare new crimes and establish rules of conduct for all its citizens in future cases. They may command what is right and prohibit what is wrong. But they cannot change innocence into guilt or punish innocence as a crime or violate the right of an antecedent lawful private contract or the right of private property. To maintain that our federal or state legislature possesses such powers, if they had not been expressly restrained, would, in my opinion, be a political heresy, altogether inadmissible in our free republican governments." Consequently, any US citizen in the position of David Hicks has an entitlement to challenge a retrospective criminal offence in the American courts, right to the Supreme Court. Recently, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, in the case of Boumediene against Bush, decided by a narrow 2-1 majority that detainees held at Guantanamo Bay who are not US citizens have no constitutional rights. The US Supreme Court has not yet ruled on the question, although it is likely to do so in a round of appeals from the Boumediene decision. The issue may ultimately be resolved in favour of the Guantanamo detainees. On the other hand, if the position in Boumediene is confirmed, then in practical terms there will be no constitutional obstacle to the US Military Commission applying a retrospective criminal law to David Hicks, even though this could not happen legally to any citizen of the United States. What is clear, however, is that the matter is likely to take some time before it's finally determined. It is here that a travesty of justice becomes plainly apparent. While the legal system works out the answer to the problem, David Hicks will continue to be locked up in his concrete box at Guantanamo Bay or face a military commission trial for a crime which ultimately may be found never to have existed. Perhaps worse, to put an end to the agony of his indefinite detention, he may be unfairly pressured to plead guilty to a potentially non-existent offence as part of a plea bargain which the prosecutor appears keen to pursue. In February 2004, the Prime Minister stated the position of his government on retrospective criminal laws in no uncertain terms. Mr. Howard said on ABC television in relation to the Hicks matter, "It's fundamentally wrong to make a criminal law retrospective." The federal government has continued to make it clear that in its view, Hicks has not broken any law of Australia, and it is improper to apply a retrospective criminal law to him. It has been on this basis that the government has sought to justify the continued detention of Hicks at Guantanamo Bay and his trial for a war crime before a US military commission. However, now that the Americans have chosen to proceed against Hicks with a charge based on a retrospective law, the Australian government has remained starkly silent. Whatever views one holds about Hicks for whatever he might have done, there are two principles at stake which take the matter well beyond the individual concerned. The first is upholding human rights protected by the rule of law, including the important international protections against ex post facto criminal laws. Permitting the destruction of a person at the hands of the state by indeterminate detention beyond the law, awaiting a trial for an alleged ex post facto crime, compromises a vital protection against governmental abuse which ultimately affects us all. As Martin Luther King said many times and in many nations, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. The second principle involved is the need to respect and promote adherence to international law. Without this, what chance do we have to manage the really big issues of our time? The conduct of David Hicks may be viewed as misguided or reprehensible. I pass no judgment on this. If ever he is returned to Australia, it may well justify an application to a court for a control order to monitor his activities. However, his conduct does not justify sacrificing our long-standing principles of justice, our respect for human rights, or our obligations under international law. We simply cannot afford to thumb our noses at these fundamentals. In a troubled and vulnerable world, the need to protect them has never been greater. In a powerful submission to the US Supreme Court in the Hamden case, 422 current and former members of the United Kingdom and European Union parliaments said this: "The threat of terrorism is real. Governments around the world confront the dangers and the hard choices posed by confronting those dangers. To meet the danger, the world needs not only military might, but renewed and sustained commitment to the rule of law and to fundamental principles of human dignity and respect for human rights. In short, the world needs the United States to resume its role as a standard bearer for the principles of the rule of law and the protection of human rights and fundamental freedoms, which are the shared heritage of a civilized world. Australia, in standing by and failing to take any action in relation to the ex post facto criminal offence now levelled at David Hicks, which is so readily available for it to take, is not serving the interests of its strategic partner or the international community. Still less is it serving the interests of its citizens."
Peter Vickery. Peter Vickery is a Melbourne QC and Special Rapporteur for the International Commission of Jurists. Next week on Lingua Franca, we leave the case of David Hicks and turn our attention to the parlous state of Indonesian language study in Australia. I'm Kate Bockner. Join me next week for Lingua Franca.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.